Welcome to Big J's Do It Your Damn Self Podcast. Good evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the second episode of Big J's Do It Your Damn Self podcast. This one, we're going to talk a little bit about politics today. A lot of people stay away from politics, but I like politics. It's fun to talk about, and there can be some interesting discussions on politics. But since we had 45 dumbass in office, Donald Trump, things have gone more or less viral or vitriol in how it's executed and how people talk about politics. Trump was an asshole, plain and simple, and he was obviously crooked. He was obviously trying to influence things using his bully pulpit, as they call it. But I digress. This isn't about Trump. I just wanted to just get that out there. What we're going to talk about today are couple subjects, and I'm going to start off by talking about the recent verdict in Kyle Rittenhouse. Okay. To start off, I am a lifelong Democrat, voted Democrat since I was 18, will continue to vote Democrat unless Democrats just do something completely stupid, which the progressives are kind of pushing me towards that way with some of the stuff they want. I mean, there's a little too much spending going on my side of the aisle, but hey, it's what it is. But anyway, back to Kyle Rittenhouse. That case, it was not as simple as a lot of people want to make it. It was a very difficult case, and I was not a part of the case, not a witness or anything, and saw the evidence or nothing like that. But it was a difficult case because of a couple things. In the video, you can clearly see that some guys, you know, I think the guy hit him with a skateboard, knocked him down, punching and kicking him, and then he shoots the guy. To me, that particular one is self-defense. The guy is shown on tape hitting him, attacking him. He has the right to defend himself. Castle law, whether you like it or not, but he has the right to defend himself. Where it gets complicated is the second and third person he shot. The second and third person, after he had shot the first guy, the other two ran off, and they were running from him when he shot them. I think he shot one in the back of the head or wherever. And he shot the other one in the arm, but you can't claim self-defense if someone is running from you. There's no imminent danger. How he gets off with that, I have no idea. I don't know if the prosecutor just did a terrible job in that. I'm not sure what happened, but this case, it really illustrates the divide among everybody of how we view politics, gun rights, white, black. It's in a way, it's kind of sad because every black person that I know obviously wanted Rittenhouse to do some time. And of course, I knew at the top that he was not going to do any more time in jail because he was going to get let off. And that was based on listening to some of the rulings the judge made about how things were going to be done in his courtroom, which is the judge's prerogative. Listening to the prosecutor, who I don't know if he did a great job or not, but he got admonished by the judge for trying to bring something into the case. And after being told he can't do that, he still tried to bring it in the case. That's bad prosecution, and we've got enough of that. That's a whole different subject I can get on later. So it became a difficult case. This guy's up here throwing alligator tears out, and, you know, obviously he's drawing sympathies. But if you look now at the supporters and the people who wanted to see him in jail, you could just see a huge difference in how people believe and how things are done. I also think the media directed a few things. And even though I'm a Democrat, I think they directed things in a way that weren't exactly correct. Like, for instance, I did not know the three guys he shot, Kyle Rittenhouse shot, were white. For the longest, I thought they were black guys. I'm like, and then of course, I'm thinking, he shot black guys. He won't do a day in jail. You can forget that. But they were white guys. But that really wasn't, and some people say that it was in the media, that it was well known. Maybe I missed it. I usually don't miss stuff, but it didn't seem like the media went out of the way to say that they were white guys. It, you know, if they had been black guys, their picture would have been all on the media every day. I think the Washington Post reported something on that, which made it, you know, it's like, wait a minute, that's not exactly fair and balanced in terms of journalism. So I did have an issue with that. That should have been known a long time ago. Maybe people would have viewed it differently. Maybe not. Murder is a murder, in my opinion. So it shouldn't have been viewed any differently, regardless of who he killed. Now, he did go to a Black Lives Matter rally, and I don't even know if it was an actual Black Lives Matter rally. It may have been a rally. I don't know that for 100% fact. But he went to a rally where black people were protesting, and he takes an AR-15. He has the legal right to carry a gun, and I believe in Wisconsin. But there's something to be said about common sense, and I realize he was a kid, but you things could have been diffused a whole lot sooner, and it couldn't have went to that point if I believe a cop saw him with the AR-15. If he just said, "Hey, stop! You can't come in here with that," he probably wouldn't have pulled the Second Amendment. Oh, it's my Second Amendment right. I have the right to bear arms, and he actually does. But it was interesting to see how that played out. The poor judgment used by both the police, if they saw him with an AR-15, and why are you going to this protest rally with an AR-15? You know, that's pretty obvious. You know, he's expecting trouble, and sometimes the best way to keep out of trouble is to avoid it altogether. I mean, they should have stopped him before he got there, but you know, who knows what voices were in his ear telling him, "Hey, you got to do this, you got to do that." Everyone's assuming it was white supremacists who were talking to him, and it may have been, because I think there's some video of him talking about it or whatever, and I even think that came up in the court case. I'm not sure. But at any rate, I expected him to not go to jail, because America is the way America is. You just, you know, sad, but I didn't expect him to go to jail at all, and he didn't go to jail. Now, the circumstances specifically, like I said, the rulings by the judge, the ineffective prosecution, which I thought was ineffective since he was getting admonished by the judge, and there are circumstances in that obviously went in the favor of him not going to jail, and that played a role. You'd be silly to ignore that. But moving forward, you know, looking at how we are so divided now as a nation with different political values and obviously different races. We've always been that. Treatment of the people, how things are done. Anyone that's black will know what it's like to have some racial discrimination applied to them. Even, except maybe these youngsters, they weren't around long enough, but I think they see it. I think they know it. And then I really can't make that statement. I remember as a small child, very young, in the 60s, going down south, late 60s at that, probably 1969, going down south and not being served at a restaurant. They're looking at us like crazy, like we're crazy. We were on our way to Pine Bluff, Arkansas. So, you know, I remember that occurring with me, my parents and myself years and years ago. Let's take a journey back and look at the history of how blacks and the Democratic Party came together. Because I don't know how many people knew this, but after slavery, during the Reconstruction period, which is, 1865 to 1877, I believe, blacks were Republicans. That is a fact. The Democrats controlled the South, and they were former slaveholders, Klansmen and whatnot. And this can be looked into, you know, just do a little bit of research on your own. You don't have to pull a history book out, but this goes all the way through to the 1960s, I believe, or late 50s or whatever. Calvin Coolidge, that's the 1920s. He was the epitome of a racist president. What was the movie? Birth of a Nation, which was a story about how the Klan came in and saved this poor white woman from all these animals, the black people. And he lists you the statements and yeah, that's exactly how it is. And crazy. I was surprised they came out a few years ago with a movie named Birth of the Nation. You know, the name itself is divisive. And if you don't understand what it means, you probably should have looked at what Birth of the Nation really meant years ago. But anyway, let's move forward in discussing this blacks and the Democratic Party. Typically, and I believe Martin Luther King was even a Republican. I'm pretty sure of that. But the Republican Party was not as conservative. They were still fiscally conservative, but they were more social liberal. And in the 1950s and 60s, they actually were fighting for civil rights. It was because of the Northern Republicans up in New England and, you know, New York and that area, and, you know, the Democrats that were up there, that we got the 1964 Civil Rights Act. That may have been the straw that broke the camel's back, however, because after the Civil Rights Act, and even before that, Eisenhower and Nixon, in the 50s and 60s, when they were running for president, they had what was called the Southern Strategy. And what that was to convert Southern Democrats into the Republican Party, which was done later under Reagan. Let me say that again, because that's very important. Southern Democrats were converted to what we know now as the Republican Party into Republicans by something called the Southern Strategy. This was done under Nixon, but it wasn't very successful. He did garner some votes, but it was perfected under Ronald Reagan in 1980. Reagan gave a speech at Stone Mountain, Georgia, a solid Democrat area, where he made the reference to the welfare queen going to pick up her welfare check in a Cadillac. I remember hearing those comments because I was watching it on television with my parents, and I'm sitting there like, did he just say what I think he said? And I'm only, 14 or 15 years old at the time. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know, he just basically, you know, told these son of bitches that, you know, the ghetto welfare queen's getting her welfare check in a Cadillac. Which ODB of Wu-Tang Clan made a line about it later in his solo album. But, you know, I digress on that. But this happened in 1980. And basically it amounted to converting more Southern Democrats into Republicans. And we have what we have now. The South is generally solid red Republican. You go down to Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, most parts of Florida, all of that solid red now. And that's where that came from. That is the modern Republican Party, not the age-old Republican Party back in the during Reconstruction. And even during slavery, the Republican Party had two factions. They had the regular Republican Party, which is sort of similar to what we got today. And then they had the radical Republican Party, which included Lincoln, Charles Sumner. People from Sumner know what I'm talking about. But the radical Republican Party was the ones that were a lot more socially liberal and were a lot more, they were against slavery completely. They were the abolitionists. I know you're saying, Big J, you give me all this history, but it's leading to a point where I'm going to tell you, you know, ease you into my topic is on this, which is politics. Fast forward to today. We have so much going on with the Democratic Party. We have a little too much spending, in my opinion. And we're seeing that in inflation. Inflation is going to go up. I don't care what they say. They always come up with this. We're going to tax the rich. That has never worked because the rich have tax shelters and figured out ways to get around paying these exorbitant income taxes. You don't pay income tax on if you don't have income. And the way they get around that is they do capital gains. Capital gains tax is 15% or to 20%, I believe, depending on your level of income. They're never going to pay their fair share because that is in the tax code. And there's no way to separate it out. And even a lot of people who aren't rich use capital gains, business owners in particular, capital gains instead of regular income tax, so they don't pay taxes. Nobody wants to pay taxes. I mean, that's just the reality of it. So whenever I hear a Democrat saying, you know, we're going to tax the rich, I'm like, oh, okay, you're just pandering for votes because that's not going to work. But moving on even from that, a lot of my people, and myself included, believe and firmly believe that reparations are due to Black people. I will repeat that. I believe that reparations are due to Black people. But there are issues. Number one issue is, how do you pay for it? Is it really reparations if you're paying taxes on it to pay yourself? Because there is no way, the only way they can distinguish, you know, they don't distinguish your race in your taxes. There's no spot on your IRS return that has race. Number two is, because of what I just said about race, who's Black and gets reparations? How do you determine that? Birth certificates are one, census records, but then there's problems in that because everybody knows that as soon as something like that comes up, we're going to give Black people reparations. Everybody's going to become Black because everybody wants that money. Everybody's going to become Black. And you have to prove that people are Black, and that's going to be a difficult task. That's not something, you know, everybody glosses over that, but you got to prove it. And those two things and some of the lawsuits and the encroachments on affirmative action, minority development, and everything else, I think that's going to cause a big problem. How do you can't, per the lawsuit, you can't do certain things based on race alone. And that will lead us to, if something does ever get passed, it'll have to go to court because somebody's going to challenge that in court. And right now we have a very conservative court. So I don't expect to see reparations in my lifetime. I also said I never expected to see a Black president, and then Obama came along. But so, hey, I could be wrong. But I just really don't expect it. And the reason I don't expect it is because of everything I just named. You know, how does it get paid for? Who's really Black? And will it survive a court challenge? I don't think it can do all that. So while that's a nice wish, I don't know. We'll find out. Well, that's all I have for tonight, folks. I just wanted to sit down and talk to you about politics, you know, let you know where I stand on politics. My thoughts on it. I'll probably do later episodes talking about local politics. But that's generally where I stand on this matter, and I hope everybody has a good night. Thank you, and have a good night.